Hello and welcome to SciLux, the podcast where we talk about scientific developments and technological changes in Luxembourg, as usual, proudly powered by Research Luxembourg and recording at the Media Center of University of Luxembourg. And in today's show, we actually have a special reverse situation because normally I introduce my guests, but I will ask the guests to introduce themselves. Okay, so we have Patrick Dang and Michael Dang. And guys, it's very complicated to understand exactly what you're doing and why you're here. So I will just leave the floor to you. Patrick, can you start?
Okay. So yeah, I'm Patrick and I'm actually the brother of Michael. That's why the first title. And yeah, I'm a resident in oncology here at CHL, Centre Hospitalier du Luxembourg, and a part-time doctoral student as well here at LCSB. Yeah, I'm here to talk about my research, I think, yeah.
Okay. Yes, I hope so at least. Yeah. Although we can also talk about the doctoral practice too. And, okay. You know, I never know what actually residency means. I know that residents sometimes protest. So probably, I think it's kind of, you have something shared with PhD students, right? Yeah. Because, you know, the conditions are different somehow and not always exactly what
you would Two different worlds. Yeah. And so a resident in oncology is somebody who's doing his specialization in oncology.
Okay.
So not an oncologist yet, but a doctor already.
Getting there.
Seeing the light at the end of the tunnel.
Okay, and then we have Michael. So what about you, Michael?
I currently specialize in oncology as well. And I currently work at the NCT in Heidelberg. That is the National Center for Tumor Diseases. And I also do a bit of research, but mainly I work on translating research into clinical practice.
And that's what we mean with translation when we talk about medicine, right? When you have translational, it's basically kind of the in-between the medical practice and the research.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, because I'm a translator in background and I was wondering, well, I don't see exactly the the same thing, but yes, I think on the website it says something like you're a translational expert or translation, something like that.
Yes.
Possible?
It's a term that is not very often used, but okay. It can be said, yeah.
Okay, perfect. Good. So we have brothers specializing in oncology. So I was just wondering, you know, is it fun during family meetings for you? Because oncology is a serious topic. There's a lot to discuss and it's a serious research. It's very difficult. So kudos to you that you're doing it. But I'm just thinking that probably you end up, you know, sitting at the family table and discussing it, or you try not to.
No, we don't. We really don't.
It's work is work. But that's the first reaction we get when we say we do oncology. It's like, oh no, it's so sad. And but actually you have very sad moments, but you have very happy moments as well. Since we are, I think, more glass half full sort of guys, we really focus on that. And so
And it really helps often when you have family who knows what you're doing and knows what's hard about it, what is difficult. When you have somebody you can talk to when you need to, that is great as well.
I'm impressed your family knows what you're doing, because one of the problems here, when I meet people, researchers, they're like, oh, you know, I tried so many times to explain, and they're just not getting it. So
it must be tough, yeah.
Yeah. Do not go ask them what we do, but we're saying they know what we're doing.
At least you hope so. At least, you know, they're good at nodding.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what counts. Yes. But, you know, maybe after this podcast, because one of my missions, of course, the main mission is to talk about research in Luxembourg. But one of the missions is also to help, you know, family relations, because I noticed that some of the guests were saying, oh, you know, I played the podcast to my family and it seems they got it. So, so yes. Okay. Anyway, happy moments, right? So let's focus on that, because that two big subjects that we could discuss with you, Patrick, and I really don't know which one to start with, because I have a feeling that if we start with one, the other one, we just won't have time to discuss.
Yeah, so the main thing is to tell me when I go too, when I should stop talking.
Maybe your brother could.
Yeah, maybe.
I think he should be good at this.
Yeah, so the two main subjects I work in is actually the microbiome, the gut microbiome, and oncology, so cancer therapies, mainly immunotherapy. And of course, you cannot talk about one without the other. Maybe we should start with the microbiome.
Yes, let's start with that. Good.
So if we talked about the gut microbiome specifically, it's the microbiome we have in our body that is from the size, the most important one, and the most researched one as well. We, of course, have multiple microbiomes. You have the skin microbiomes, you have the pulmonary, lots of different ones.
But we focus mainly on the gut microbiome because it's the most important one, as I said. Yeah, what is it? Actually, it's all the microorganisms that live within our gut. What is quite interesting is, okay, now we know what it is, but how important is it, right? If I tell you that half our cells in our body are actually bacterial cells, I don't know, it kind of amazes people all every time because we always think that, okay, my body is my cells with my DNA. Naturally, it's half of our DNA is from bacterial origin.
Okay, that's a lot. Yes, I can see you're just trying to explain more, so I'm amazed. So now I'm amazed. Yes.
Okay. Let that sink in.
It had to sink in. It's early in the morning.
No, yeah. So just to understand how important and complex it is, right? Because, well, you could say that is a whole organ by itself that we didn't study for many years, and it's only very new now. So that's, if you count cells, it's more than half of our cells are bacterial cells. Now, if you look at the gene pool, because I think with Michael, we're going to talk a lot about genes. So the coding part of our DNA, we, in our human DNA, we have 20,000 different genes, right? I'm looking at my brother, the specialist.
I can confirm.
Yeah. Okay. Good. You're still okay.
So we have about 20,000 different genes. And now if we talk about the gene pool of those bacteria, there's about 3.5 million different non-redundant genes. So yeah, it's a very important part of our body.
So we can't just go and remove them for sure.
No. And that's the crazy part. It's only, we've been only talking about it for a couple of years now. So it's a part of our body that we really don't know. And that is actually quite impressive. That has a lot of impact on our health and in disease as well.
And it's pretty research in Luxembourg, I have to say. I mean, we already had a few guests here discussing that. We had, at a certain moment, Catherine Sedrani, who did a PhD with Professor Wilmers, of course. So, yeah. You know, we were discussing the links of gut microbiome. And then, of course, we also had Alberto Noronha, who went to have a spin-off, Neom, also related to gut on the chip, right? So there is a lot of discussion. And I have to say that the moment I start preparing for the subject, then, of course, the algorithm thinks, oh, she's interested in the gut. And I get a lot of, you know, kind of a huge pool of people talking about the gut because we're talking research, but there's a lot of, you know, I don't know, podcasts and specialists who are focusing so much on it right now. Mm-hmm. I really have a feeling that it's become a trend.
Well, it's the reason why I came back to Luxembourg, because I was working in Germany before, studied in Paris before that. But here in Luxembourg, you have that hub that specializes in microbiome. And it's so interesting to work here and to get the funding as well, which is very important for research. Yeah, this is the reason why I'm here now and I'm going to stay.
Okay, Michael keeps nodding his head, so he does agree all the time. I'm checking, we're following. But then he said that you're a specialist in genetics, but then you're actually doing cancer research. So what's the link?
Yeah, so cancer research right now, there's a heavy part of it that is focused on genetics. Before, of course, we used a lot of standard chemotherapies, but more and more we are starting to introduce targeted therapies that target mutations that are found in a patient's tumor. There's a lot of new drugs that are on the market that are really targeting only one specific mutation. And so we are trending towards a more personalized medicine in cancer.
And this is also a big subject in Luxembourg, I have to say, right? All the discussions at LIH about personalized cancer treatment. We also had guests about that. Yeah. So, you know, it's really another strong thing. Maybe you're coming back to Luxembourg as well at a certain moment.
Yes, I hope to. What we are doing right now in Heidelberg is something that is not currently being done in Luxembourg. You need specialized experts, you need certain infrastructure and organization that is not yet available in Luxembourg. But I hope that in the future, patients that are treated for cancer in Luxembourg will have access to the same techniques as they currently have in Heidelberg. Okay.
So before you explain all the techniques to me, all of them, of course, I want everything. I think it's the moment we ask the pub quiz questions, because I know they are kind of more surface questions. So before we dig deep into the research, which I love doing in the podcast. So I don't know who wants to start with the questions.
I can start.
Yes, you're already at the mic. Let's put it this way. So start with the question.
So my question is, if you were to put the human genome end to end, how long would it be? in centimeters? Would it be A, 2 centimeters long, B, 20 centimeters long, C, 2 meters, and D, 20 meters?
Okay, perfect. And remember the answer only at the end of the podcast. And now, Patrick, for you.
The question I have is, what is immunotherapy most influenced by?
Okay. So we have immunotherapy and we have the genome, but you said human genome. Do we know how long the genome of all the bacteria that are in our body would
That's be? That's a good question. I really don't know.
Well, it would be 150 times longer.
Oh, okay. You see? He was prepared for that. Okay, good. Wow.
I'm sounding like an expert. Yes.
And listeners, you need to know they do not have any papers in front of them. This is really the top of the head. We will need a fact checker later on to check all that. So we are not really saying anything incorrect. But anyway, coming back, thank you for the questions. Remember, answers only at the end of the podcast. Coming back, digging deep. So you said, what you're doing in Heidelberg is not done in Luxembourg. So what is it?
So I think to properly explain it, we have to dial it back. As you may know, the origin of cancer comes from mutations. We all have cells in our bodies that continually divide and replicate. And every so often, there will be mistakes that will be done in the replication of the DNA. Most of these mistakes are harmless and the cell either just dies or the immune system will destroy it. But every so often, there will be a cell that will have superpowers that are linked to a new mutation. A superpower such as being immortal or replicating very fast and endlessly. And that will lead actually to the formation of what we know as a tumor. So a group of cells that expands in an otherwise healthy organ. It can be said that the greatest strength of a tumor is actually that mutation. It drives the tumor to grow. But we also came to see that maybe even if it is its strength, it can also be its weakness because it is dependent on a certain mutation to grow. So that is actually what we are doing right now at the NCT in Heidelberg. We do a profiling of a tumor of a patient. We find what mutation drives the tumor, and then we look for a treatment that targets that particular mutation.
Okay. All right. Yes, I'm processing. You see, it's taking time. Yes, you're looking at me. Yes, yes.
And the mutation, what is very nice about it for the patients is that it's only the cancer cells have that mutation. So if you look at chemotherapy, for instance, chemotherapy is not targeted at all. Chemotherapy affects every cell in your body, every single cell. And so you have a lot of secondary effects. What you don't have with targeted therapy as much is that it only targets the cancer cells. So for patients as well, it is very, very...
Unfortunately, it doesn't only target the cancer cells, but it's more targeted. So you have less secondary effects, that's for sure,
I would say that there is one step, which is the targeted treatment, and then the other one, the personalized treatment, right? Am I getting it right, more or less?
In this case, it's both.
It's both.
Personalized and targeted, because you really have to take a sample from the patient's tumor, a biopsy, and you have to sequence the genome of that particular tumor.
And how much can you standardize it? In the sense, okay, this cancer has these mutations, so all the patients that have this cancer can have that targeted therapy, or is it really very much case by case?
It's very much case by case. And that's the huge challenge. Also, when it comes to research, if you want to evaluate the efficacy of a particular drug for a given mutation, you will have a very small number of cases in a lot of mutations. So that's the huge challenge for personalized medicine, doing proper large scale studies with a very small number of cases.
And on top of it, actually being fast enough to do the biopsy, to analyze, and then actually to adjust the treatment according to what you're finding there.
Yes. All of that takes quite some time. That's also something for oncologists that is a challenge. You have to think about it in advance, because when you ask for the test to be done, it will usually take about 2 months to get the result. And of course, in those 2 months, there's a potential for the disease to progress and for the patient to get sicker. So it has to be done in advance in order to not be too late, actually. Yeah.
Okay, so a lot to be done. Yeah. I get it. Yeah. Hopefully one day in Luxembourg. Coming back to you. So we talked a little bit about the microbiome, but we did not talk about the other big thing. So let's just scratch the surface of the other, and then we try to mix it all together and see what happens.
Actually, what connects both was something that happened a couple of years ago. A couple of years ago, oncologists noticed that the patients that have cancer are under immunotherapy, specifically immune checkpoint inhibitors.
Once again, the name was immune
checkpoint inhibitors.
Okay, yes, go on.
Sorry. I will explain.
Yes, exactly. You have to.
So immune checkpoint inhibitors are a sort of cancer therapy that unleashes your immune system to fight cancer cells. So it doesn't really directly affect cancer cells, but it uses your immune system to combat the cancer cells. The way it does it is actually it blocks the inhibitory pathways of your immune system. Because one of the hallmarks of cancer, this is what superpowers Michael was talking about. Cancer cell has a couple of functions it needs to acquire through mutations to become prolific. So Michael was talking about being immortal, etc. And one of the hallmarks is actually evading the immune system. The way it does that is actually just it deactivates every immune cell that comes in contact with the tumor cell. So it is actually kind of flying under the radar of your immune system, right? And immune checkpoint inhibitors, what they do is they are like little hats, you can imagine. And they sit on that part of the immune cell where the tumor cell can deactivate it. So the immune cell cannot be deactivated anymore. And that is immune checkpoint inhibitors. They do that. So they unleash your immune system. And the immune checkpoint inhibitors can combat the tumor cells like that. So it's in a way a bit of a targeted therapy. If we talk about secondary effects, it's a lot less than chemotherapy as well. It's not as targeted as what Michael was talking about. But it is a bit more personalized because it's your immune system, right? That only in the perfect world, let's say, attacks your cancer cells. Of course, now I don't know if you want to talk about secondary effects, et cetera, but it's linked to how that drug functions. If your immune system is unbalanced, it can have an unbalanced response and it can attack your body as well, right? But now, getting back to...
we
were very far away. So those immune checkpoint inhibitors, oncologists noticed that patients who are under antibiotics, they respond less well to that immunotherapy. That seems a bit weird at the beginning, right? Because antibiotics, they have nothing to do with cancer. But basically, what they noticed is that antibiotics, of course, what do? They kill bacteria. Where do you have the most bacteria? It's in your gut. So that old-fashioned view of antibiotics only killing pathogenic bacteria is wrong. It also kills all the healthy bacteria that we need in our body. So there is a link between antibiotics, your gut microbiome, and immunotherapy. So...
Yes.
Okay. So what we are researching now is the holy grail, let's say, is what is the perfect microbiome profile that somebody can have to respond to immunotherapy? And that is a very difficult question. So I don't know if you have an hour. No, I'm kidding. So that's the goal. That's the actually the research I'm doing is exactly that. Is how does your gut microbiome influences your immune system? And more specifically, how does it influence your response to immunotherapy in the context of cancer?
I have probably 20 questions now, but I'll start with the first one.
Yeah.
Just in general, immune system as such, right? Because that's also, basic level, we understand, right? It's important to have it working and it's helping us. But I was just wondering, how much can we really influence it? Because you're talking here about, the cancer treatments, but in general, how much can we strengthen it itself? And how much do we still not know how it works?
So we still don't know a lot, but we know the basic principles. So what we do know, what I can say is that, for instance, now only talking about your immune system, is that a healthy diet, exercising, sleep is very important for your immune system. And then you have, if you're stressful and all those factors. So it's really lifestyle factors that influence a lot your immune system. Then you have factors that you cannot influence. For instance, we know that people that are born by C-section tend to have a lot more immune-related chronic diseases. So that's as well, we know now that it goes hand in hand with the microbiome. I listened to your podcast about epigenetics and I was very happy to hear about the fact that the first 1,000 days of your life are very important. So from conception till 2 years old, let's say, are very important for your immune system. And the C-section is really about that. When you are born through C-section, you get that first contact with your mother's skin microbiome instead of the vaginal microbiome. So your the first 1,000 days of your life are very important to educate your immune system. And we know that has long-lasting effects on your health, right? Now, the other thing people talk to me a lot about is, okay, I have that yogurt with some, you know, probiotics, and is that good for my immune system? And I mean, you do...
I'm so happy I did not ask that question. It came from you.
No, but... It's a very good question, right? We know that your 70% of your immune system is in your gut. So we know that one of the main functions of your gut microbiome is educating your immune system, as well as metabolize the nutrients, vitamins, hormones, etc. But one of the main jobs is really educating the immune system. The problem actually with probiotics is that, okay, we know that this probiotic is good for you, but we still don't know if you eat it, is it really going to colonize your gut? Is there space for it in your gut? As I said, there's thousands of families of different kinds of bacteria in your gut, and because there's a whole competition going on, right? So does that one bacteria you have in your yogurt really have the place and the strength to colonize your gut, right? Or part of your gut? Or we can say it in another way. Okay, is it colonizing your gut, but maybe is it not too much colonizing your gut? You know, so probiotics is really difficult to answer which is good, which is bad, because it's such a complex ecosystem. It's like the Amazonian rainforest, right? Is one plant you're going to plant in the Amazonian rainforest, is it going to survive or not take over a whole and destroy the ecosystem? So it's very complex, and we still don't know much about it. But to come back to your question.
Okay. You remember it.
Yeah. The most important thing is diversity. We know that gut microbiome diversity is the one thing that we are sure about influences your health and your immune system. So when I say diversity, what do I mean? An average human being in our society has about 3,000 different bacterial families in his gut. Now, a bacterial family, what is it? It's actually, if you compare on a genetic level, it would be like us. With the, I was about to say Godzilla, but it's a gorillas, you know. So that's a bacterial family. So
it's interesting research. Yeah.
We don't know about Godzilla yet.
Yeah, we don't know about that. We still much we don't know. So diversity is very important. And if you ask what can you do, for instance, foods, right? If we know that people who eat a lot of industrialized foods, they have about 1,500 different bacterial families only. If you go now to that to people who live very excluded on an island in the wild, they can have up to 5,000 different. So diversity, we know, is very important for your gut health, very important for your health in general, for your immune system, and for your response to immunotherapy.
Yay. Okay. Yes. We've made a huge circle. And I'm also thinking, you know, this is one of our problems, that actually some of the solutions are pretty simple. Yeah. They are the ones we keep repeating, you know, when I ask some of the specialists exactly in cancer treatment or in other, you know, Parkinson's disease that we don't know. I mean, in many treatments, we don't know as much, but in general, for sure, we know healthy diet, you know, exercising, yeah, sleeping. We know all this, but mm-hmm, people somehow are looking for something easier.
Yeah,
than
no,
all
that's
this,
a,
right?
Yeah, it's crazy actually, because we always want to take shortcuts, yeah, like probiotics. Or the C-section, we do 40% of births are C-sections. And actually, it should be 10, 15, because I don't want to say that antibiotics as well or C-section is a bad thing. No, it saves lives. It's very good. It's important we have it, but we shouldn't overuse it. And I think looking for shortcuts is exactly that. Every probiotic you can find on the market, every single one you can find in your food. And why is food better? Because it plays into that whole ecosystem. It's not just one strain of bacteria. For instance, if you eat yogurt, we know that there's like 4 to 5 different important strains of bacteria that we need, right? So even a normal yogurt where they don't say there's a probiotic in it has bacteria in it, right? And even a little hint, if it's less sugar, it's even better. Not because of the sugar, but because the bacteria in it survive better if there's less sugar.
So bacteria don't like sugar as much as we do.
No, okay. No.
All right. He monopolized the discussion. Oh, sorry, I was just thinking.
No, it was very interesting. So I didn't want to interrupt.
Yeah, but what I gather from this is that basically you're specializing in different types of treatment. So what I was thinking of is, okay, a patient comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what do you do then? How do you choose, actually? Is it because of the cancer type? Is it because you are more specialist in it, so you can actually say, yeah, I think this is going to work better? Or, okay, I know I have a lot of friends, family members who have undergone different stages of cancer treatment. And of course, chemotherapy is the thing that is still very much prevalent and used, and we know also the success rate or everything. But what about the other treatments? How does it go?
Yeah, so that's what's interesting about oncology is the treatment is incredibly diversified right now. Of course, there's surgery, there's radiotherapy, there's chemotherapy, there's immunotherapy, then there's targeted therapies on genetic mutations. And of course, as an oncologist, that is also a huge challenge because we have to know about very, very varied fields of medicine. And that's why you have to work with specialists. You can't know everything. You have to see when a certain therapy is indicated and refer your patient to a specialized tumor board to get counseling on how you should proceed with a certain patient. And in Luxembourg right now, what is being done is limited genomic sequencing of just a few hundred genes. And we do have a molecular tumor board that does recommend targeted treatments according to the results of that limited gene panel. But what we don't have is really broad genomic sequencing, as in whole genome sequencing with the transcriptome and proteomics. So maybe I should just explain the difference.
Yes, and the tumor board as well, because you keep mentioning it. I have no idea what the tumor board is.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'll start with the differences between a gene panel and the larger sequencing. So I think to start, I would maybe explain, in your cell, you have DNA, you have RNA, and you have proteins. And maybe to explain it as an image, you could say that the DNA is like the library you have in your cell, and the cell uses this library with all the blueprints for all the tools it uses. So that's the DNA. Then you have the RNA. The RNA, you can imagine it like the books that the cell takes out of the library to transfer that blueprint to where it makes the tools. And the tools in that case would be the proteins. So right now, what we are doing in Luxembourg is we are just looking at which books are in the cell's library, the tumor cell's library. And we have a limited panel of about 300 to 500 genes that we know have an effect on tumor growth. And yeah, we take a look and see, that particular blueprint is mutated. Maybe that's the cause why this patient has cancer. And we can give a treatment according to that information. But what is being done in bigger centers like Heidelberg is we look at the blueprints, if they are different than in a healthy cell, and we look at what books are going in and out of that library. If we see a certain book that keeps getting used by the cell, that's an important information. And we look at the proteins. So we look at which tools are present in the cell in an abnormal amount. And of course, that gives us a much more complete image of how this tumor cell works. And it has been proven now through multiple studies that allows us to find more targeted treatments for cancer patients. The challenge, of course, is that it takes a lot of experts to interpret all this data. It takes a lot of time. It's also, of course, a question of money. That's always a big question in medicine. How much money are we ready to pay for a certain patient? And that's why it has to be very well organized, all of this. It can't just be guesswork. And that's where the molecular tumor board comes in. That's like a meeting between oncologists, geneticists, bioinformaticians. And in that meeting, all of the specialists discuss a particular case, look at the results of the sequencing of the genome, and we give a treatment recommendation together.
We, meaning you are also part of that tumor board?
Yes, yes. That's the oncologist. I'm an oncologist. I'm specializing in oncology. And what I do is I look at the data, at the mutations that are present for a given patient. And I look at the research. I look at papers that exist about this particular mutation. And I search for a treatment that targets that particular mutation.
And I have to jump again. Leaving this, we can't continue because you were right. There's just way too much to discuss, you know? It's way too much to discuss. But I noticed that there is something that we did not discuss, and I was wondering once again, not from my practice, because I don't really know whether anyone I know was using immunotherapy, looking at immunotherapy for cancer treatment. What about the side effects then? Because you kept mentioning there are some, so what are they?
So the immunotherapy unleashes your immune system. And sometimes the immune system attacks not only the tumor cells, but your body as well. So it's often very organ specific. And it can, for instance, be that you have colitis. So your colon gets attacked, pneumonitis. It can be various organs that can get attacked by the immune system. But you have to say as well that those patients who show such secondary effects often have a very good response to cancer because the immune system actually got so aggressive that it took care of the cancer as well, right? That those are the side effects. And now to maybe bounce back.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, so colitis, for example, that's very frequent with immunotherapy, usually that translates to diarrhea. But it can be very heavy diarrhea that we have to treat, but it most of the time is quite mild.
And Aya, the way you treat it is actually by giving cortisone. So what does cortisone do? It just calms down your immune system, right? And so coming back to the factors that influence your immune system, antibiotics, cortisone, all those things influence, of course, your immune system as well. Now, maybe bouncing back from what Michael said with the very, very nice
library. Yeah,
I don't know if you realize, but you're kind of like, when one speaks, the other one is really like, whoa, I have a nice brother here. Okay.
Well, like we said, at the table, we don't talk about work.
At home, we don't.
So very happy to talk about work now. So what's actually special about my research is that I look at the tools as well, so which is a lot more of a functional way of looking at the problem. Because the studies that were done before was on a genomic level. So they were looking at the libraries. So what genomes do they find in your gut? What bacteria are in your gut? And the problem was actually that we are so different. The both of us here, we have nothing in common. It's like a fingerprint on the gut microbiota level. And of course, if we are very different, it's very difficult to find patterns, right? So the study is looking at therapies, trying to find the holy grail. Okay, what do all the patients who have shown a response to immunotherapy, what do they have in common? Well, it was very difficult to find a common pattern to all the cohorts, right? So one was saying, okay, this bacteria is important. Then another study said, oh, we found this one. So, you know, that was really the problem. And what we found here at LCSB is actually that if you look at the functional level, so at the tools, the proteins, then there's a lot less variation. So you can see a lot more patterns when you look at just the functional level, which means actually that you can have different bacteria, but who have the same function. So that's the idea behind our study now. It's look at the tools. What biomolecules are the bacteria emitting into your bloodstream to communicate with the host?
So finding kind of common denominator so then you can pull different gut microbiomes and kind of have some results afterwards.
Exactly. That's exactly what we do. So we are having lung cancer patients who all get immunotherapy, and then we are trying to find a pattern, a profile of the microbiome and all the molecule it's emitting of those who respond or of those who not respond. In the future, before patients get therapy, we can analyze his gut microbiome and this whole complex of biomolecules it's emitting and say, okay, you are going to probably respond or not respond to immunotherapy. Right. First of all, because if you don't respond to immunotherapy, then we will not give it to you. Right. Because right now we do it a bit blindly. We give it and we hope it works, but it can have secondary effects and so on. So if you don't need it, we will not give it. And then, of course, it's very expensive.
It's about 100,000 euros a year for one patient. It's just the drug. It's not the hospital, the nurses, everything. So it's very expensive. And then the second goal, of course, is to understand the mechanisms that are behind it. If you look at the tools, you understand how it works. And if you understand how it works, you can change it. So that's the idea behind this study, is really understand the mechanisms that are behind the whole microbiome immune system interaction.
And we have to put the classic scientific labels on it. So that the name of the project is the ImmediX, or yes. That's not it. How do you read it, actually?
So a different everybody reads it differently. I didn't think that when I was when I decided.
Yeah, maybe asking a communication specialist. Or, yeah. Anyway, yes.
We need a translator.
Exactly. So yes. So that's ImmediX, it. And yeah. And that's what you can read more. We will also share the link in the show notes. You can read on Fondation Cancer website about a little bit. And that's. Yes. Done with the support of, I guess, LCSB.
Thank you.
Yes.
So I have to thank Fondation Cancer. Over half of the funding came from Fondation Cancer, so I'm very thankful for it. Then, of course, I have the LIH and LCSB and CHL who are funding this project as well. And then, of course, all the clinical partners, right? Because the patients, they need to be recruited, they need to be followed up. And there's a whole team behind that as well. So it's the Hôpital Robert Schumann in the city and Emil Meirisch here in Esch, and of course the CHL as well.
So a lot of partners. We mentioned them now.
Yes. can relax.
It's all right. Okay, good. I think, unfortunately, after all these partners, this is the moment to start wrapping up and going back to the pub quiz questions that we had in the beginning. So we start with the genome. So what's the length? How is it?
So it's 2 meters long, actually. So if you think about it, it's quite incredible. Great. Yeah, in each cell, you have the whole genome, and it's 2 meters long if you were to put it end to end.
2 meters and 20,000 genes in it, in those 2 meters.
Yes.
It's a big library, yeah? Yeah. My library at home isn't 2 meters.
Yeah. That's why I have headaches.
For sure. Okay, and the other question?
The gut microbiome and immunotherapy is influenced by antibiotics, of course, all kinds of medications, but mostly of your lifestyle. So how you eat, the diversity we talked about it, of your microbiome, your physical exercise.
Okay, so all the stuff we discussed, so if you paid attention, we got the answer, right? And I actually, just to wrap up, probably a very lay question, but I was always wondering, as we're talking antibiotics, when I get an antibiotic from a doctor, fortunately not often, and I'm very grateful to my doctor that the approach is rather, you know, go home and relax rather than just get another medication. Sometimes I also get something to protect the flora, the bacterial flora, right? So is that related in a way? Is that the bacteria we were talking about, that the antibiotic attacks, that are the good bacteria, or it's completely something different?
It's one way to protect the gut microbiome, but there's not a lot of scientific evidence yet. The best way to really protect your gut flora is, like we said, to not take antibiotics if possible, not take it too long. So that's GP's job, actually. And like you said, it's very important to relax, actually, because a lot of GPs see a very nervous patient, and then it's difficult to say, no, you don't need antibiotics, right? Or it's the weekend now, it's Friday. If it gets worse tomorrow, or I'm going to be on a weekend, I cannot prescribe it. So I'm just going to prescribe the antibiotics, right? So it's very important to chill. And then, of course, the most important thing, that I'm saying it again, is really, do not eat industrialized foods. Try to eat as much fruits and vegetables as possible. That changes everything. And to maybe help you relax next time, your microbiome refurbishes very fast. And if you take some antibiotics for a couple of days, the day after already changes. And so it's very, if you need antibiotics, take them, but not too long. And then your microbiome will restore within weeks, right? I think that's a very good take-home message.
I don't have to say anything anymore. Well, I have to ask you, Michael. So what's the next best thing for the targeted therapy? More data?
Yes, of course. I mean, continually, there's more data that is being produced, and it's really great to see. But I think the next big thing is introducing all of this to Luxembourg. that's what we are hoping to do.
So fingers crossed for that.
And
happy.
Maybe I can add just one thing. For patients, if they listen, it's being included in trials.
Yes.
Because that helps out a lot. Like my patients, for instance, they will not see any benefits from our study, sadly, of course. I think we will see some benefits of it. But yeah, trials. I mean, there's so much we don't know yet. And it helps a lot.
It is very, very important. We all know that there are certain struggles in Luxembourg when it comes to participation in all the different studies, different surveys. I am actually signed up to all the possible ones, not always participating because I can't just always fill in surveys. I have to work as well. But it's really important that we do and that we just volunteer and do that because, yes, how else can we move forward with the research?
Yeah,
exactly.
Thank you so much for coming today, Michael and Patrick. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was a real pleasure. Yeah, it was fun.
Good to hear. Dear listeners, remember that we are present on all the social media. You can follow us. You can check what we are writing about, what we're talking about, all the different episodes that are there, almost 70 right now. So you can really go back to the library. We will share all the information in the show notes. And if you have any suggestions, you're always welcome to write me or to Silex. And yes, as I mentioned, this was Silex and my name is Hanna Siemaszko.